This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
Lots to talk about, Mr. Durham. How are we doing?
I'm good. I was all ready for baseball last night. 7 o'clock, ready to ride. Tom Hart, Chris Burke, Ben McDonald greet me from TD Ameritrade with the tarp on the field. Holy cow, Pack. Did we not know 3 hours and 30-some minutes later they'd throw the first pitch? Holy smokes.
Well, welcome to my world, man. When you stay up late watching West Coast baseball, this is kind of par for the course. Wes, there's nothing better than first pitch into the wee hours. In fact, unfortunately, Texas eliminated Virginia about 25 minutes ago, according to my watch. About 25 minutes ago, that game just ended. Tough news, though, for the Hoos, right? I mean, at the end of the day, again, Texas is really good. All these teams are really good. Texas is the number two overall seed. And much like the Mississippi State game, Wes, we go into the eighth inning, and it's tight. It's 2-2, and Virginia just could not get off the field. The two-out RBI knock was a headache in the eighth and certainly in the ninth, and that was the difference in the game. As Texas takes care of business and beats Virginia 6-2. But a remarkable run for the Hoos. But, man, chances last night, and they just could not get off. They couldn't get the third out in the eighth and ninth innings, unfortunately. That was the deal.
There you go. Yeah. So what'd you do? Did you just kind of watch some other baseball last night?
I did.
How'd you handle all this?
I did. I of course, Virginia, Texas, that's what they pay us to do. So we got to watch that. And I'm used to being up in the wee hours of the night. But in the meantime, you know, you channel surf, just see what else is going on. And just happened to see that there's one of those teams down there in L.A. I keep getting them confused. Got no hit last night. And too bad for them. Really, really disappointed to see that. But we'll get to that later on. We're all about the ACC right here. But here you go.
Beloved Giants.
My beloved Giants, who had the day off. The Giants Twitter account said, it's okay, Dodgers. The Giants didn't get a hit today either. Awesome troll right there. That's what you can do when you're five up in the loss column, Wes. That's what you do when you're five up in the loss column. Just saying.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, too bad for
LA. Anyway, and unfortunate for Virginia as well.
Really,
that's a tough deal. The rain, unfortunately, is probably going to be a storyline in eastern Nebraska for a while. It's in the forecast really for about the next 4 days. So going to be interesting to see what the impact is, not only on NC State and Vanderbilt, but also on Mississippi State and Texas. The reason this event is so good, by the way, is because they know how to handle it. However, sometimes even the lightning bolts over the top of the arena in the distance can be the issue. And last night, as you see, the rain delay was 3 hours and 39 minutes. The game itself lasted 26 minutes less. So just goes to show you how taxing weather can be sometimes. Let's keep our fingers crossed that NC State and Vanderbilt get to the bump at 2 o'clock this afternoon with Matt Willardson against Kumar Rocker is the scheduled pitching matchup to get us going out there in Omaha.
Well, I am really going to do the anti-rain dance here in Charlotte because I want that game to be played because it has a direct correlation to my work schedule in the afternoon because the off-campus show will follow the NC State-Vanderbilt game for hopefully maybe a half an hour. Sounds about right for me on a Friday afternoon, 30 minutes. I can give you a solid 30 minutes of radio. By the end of the week. So I'm really hoping that game is played. I will tell you point blank, I hope NC State wins for a number of reasons. Number one, we're employed by the ACC network. Number two, I think I speak on behalf of all of America that watches college baseball that we are all sick and tired of the Whistler. It has got to go. It's the most annoying thing in college sports. I have nothing but respect for Vanderbilt's baseball program, but that combination of Whistlers has got to be eliminated. And the only way to do that is to send them packing. So personally, I got the pom-poms out today, and I speak for America. We want Vanderbilt out, not because we don't like their team, but a handful of idiots that just want to sit up there and whistle all day. We've had enough. Really, my ears are beginning to bleed after about one week. We've had enough. They got a great team. Great. And listen, I'm not knocking their team. Tim Corbin is a brilliant coach, and they've got championship DNA, and I respect that. But the whole fan thing's got to go. I mean, it's got to go. That is just – I couldn't even imagine sitting in a section in Omaha. You pay your hard-earned money to sit there and watch baseball, and you got to listen to that garbage in the section beside you. I got to tell you, I may have to say something about that because it's hard to watch. I got to be honest with you. When Vanderbilt's on TV, I normally put the mute button on. I really do. And I love watching them play. But I hope NC State takes them out. I really do. Just for America's sake, take them out.
That's how I feel about it. Do we know, is it one guy?
It doesn't need to be. One is too many. That's the point here. One is too many.
One person? Is it one person? Do we?
I think it's a combination of a couple guys. I think it's at least two. But one is too many. One is too many.
Got it.
By the way, it's... Yes.
Cowbell Whistler.
Oh, see, that was my question yesterday. You know, to me, it's an easy call. I like the cowbell. I got no problem with cowbells. Seriously. I got no issues with cowbells.
Okay.
But the Whistler, it's just annoying. It's annoying. It's like, hey, go find some Cracker Jacks, some peanuts. How about some peanut butter? Can we get this guy some peanut butter? And just let it get lodged in the throat for about 3 hours. He'll be okay. I just don't want to hear it anymore. And I wish ESPN, with all their technology of sticking cameras on top of umpires' heads, and here's what it looks like in the corner in the right field and left field. Is there a way that we can do something audio-wise to become, like, hit a button where the whistling part disappears? I love crowd noise in a baseball game. It's awesome. I love cheering, clapping, organ music. I don't care. The guy's beating the pads on the dugout. All that's great. The dink of the aluminum bat. I got no issue with any of those noises. But the Whistler should be eliminated. And like I said, America is rooting for NC State today. We don't need this to go to Saturday. We don't need any stinking rain delays. We need Elliott Avent and NC State to eliminate the Whistler today. Yeah. Immediately. So that's what America is rooting for.
Okay.
There you go.
Right. We have a great show for you today. Caroline Darney, who I'm not sure has been to sleep yet, from SB Nation, kind of the proprietor of Streaking the Lawn, which is the Virginia website, will join us from Omaha to reconcile the Cavaliers baseball season. And it's a remarkable story when you step back and think about kind of the way it started and how it ended and all those things. One of our favorites, Dan McDonald, the head baseball coach at Louisville, will be here. Why? He's seen Vanderbilt. He's seen NC State. Compare and contrast and kind of what he's seen so far.
Never lost to him. Right?
That's right.
Never lost to him one.
There you go. Mike Rooney will be here, our ACC Network and ESPN College baseball analyst. Looking forward to talking to him from Omaha this morning. And Paige Madden, who has managed to find a way to squeeze us in her busy schedule before she goes to Tokyo for the Olympics. The great Virginia swimmer will make her return to the Packer and Durham program. We've got In Case You Missed It with Kayla Traynor, the new women's lacrosse coach at Syracuse, and Boo Cargan, the athletics director at NC State, all set up for you as well. Plus, Dave Clawson was with us yesterday and mentioned something about the college football playoff that I think is pretty interesting, and we're going to talk about that today, too. And actually, I'm a little surprised. Maybe I shouldn't be, but I'm a little surprised his comments didn't get picked up by more people yesterday, Pack, about what he said about the college football playoff.
Well, you know, it's not my responsibility for that. Somebody else needs to pick up, do some heavy lifting every now and then. But I thought his comments were interesting coming from a position that you do not normally think of Wake Forest in the college football playoff, but the vast majority of teams are in that same boat where, hey, all of a sudden we have a chance. If we take care of our business and put ourselves in a position where October, November games could really, really matter. And I thought his position on that made a ton of sense. And also thought his comments regarding the bowls. and how an expansion of the college football playoff could have a trickle-down effect on the bowl business, and how the bowls have been good for college football was very intriguing. So if you missed it, you'll get that later in the show. Wes, I also mentioned that today is something that you created on the program called T-Shirt Friday, and you need to partake and lead the way here with what you're representing today.
This is Broken Tea Society. This is a spinoff of a group called, it's a magazine called The Golfer's Journal. They do events around the country. There's charitable arm to it. The Broken Tea Society, though, is kind of a fictitious society. It's, you know, Pac, when you played and you hit the ball off a wooden tee, when it would break perfectly, most times, more often than not, when you broke that tee, thus the broken tee, it was a great shot, right? So the Broken Tee Society. There you go.
So fictitious society, that'd be like, we really enjoy the Whistler on broadcast. That would be a fictitious society? Would that be accurate?
No, Broken Tee is it's a spinoff of the Golf Journal. Casey Brandon's a guy who works for that publication. Tom Coyne writes for him. It's a great publication, and they do the Broken Tee events around the country where everybody gathers and plays golf and that kind of thing. It's fun. It's a good time. We played in one. My brother and I played in one last August. It was awesome.
So, all right.
Broken Tee Society.
I gave you a little hint about what I was going to do today for T-Shirt Friday. And, of course, to me, one of the fun offbeat topics of Omaha this week has been the fact that in the press room, they have found upstairs walking around a raccoon. And when there's one raccoon, there's normally bunches of raccoons. And I know they've been trying to hunt these things down all week in the press box at Omaha. So, just by dumb luck, I'm going to partake and give you this. I eat what I want. Raccoon. I tied in my world with the raccoon from Omaha this week. I eat what I want.
Where did you get that?
I swear to you, I bought this a couple weeks ago. And when this raccoon story broke in Omaha, I just started laughing. I went, oh, my God, I am going to wear the raccoon shirt on TV because I eat what I want. And when I saw the raccoon, and they trapped two of them, I think, yesterday. I saw a video where they found two of them up there. And I'm sure they're proud of themselves in Omaha during that rain delay with nothing else to do. But I got news for you. There'll be more than two. If there's two, there's probably four. If there's four, there's probably eight. So we talked about the food options out there in Omaha. So I brought this T-shirt, kind of brings it all together. I eat what I want. The raccoon. So there it is.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
And unfortunately, Virginia was eliminated just literally hours ago after a crazy rain delay, a typical one in Omaha. It's not surprising. We get the late afternoon thunder boomers out there all the time. The weather, quite frankly, has been fantastic in Omaha until last night. Game gets pushed back, and Texas takes care of business. 1-8, 3-9, and they broke open a 2-2 game late, all with two outs, Wes. 8th and 9th inning were killers for the Hoos. And once again, the Penn just did not – just couldn't get off the field. And that's the difference in the ballgame. Yeah. And I thought yesterday Daniel Pinheiro was on with us, the former University of Virginia star of the 2015 National Championship team. And he pointed out in games like this, he thought it'd be close. It's the little things, right? The little things, the little detail things that will win the ballgame. And, you know, Virginia a little sloppy right here. But, man, two out scoring chances for Texas. 5 of their 6 runs with two outs you see on the screen. But the 8th and 9th inning were killers. You just needed one out, get off the field, and, man, you got a chance. But an interesting run for Virginia. Amazing grit, determination, winning all those elimination games. But they just fell short to a really talented Texas team, who, by the way, I can't emphasize, the number 2 national seed. That is a really, really good team.
Yeah, and the Longhorns, like everybody else, deserve to be there. And now, despite losing their first game to Mississippi State, get a chance at maybe cracking the code on the Bulldogs here starting tonight. It, you know, the thing about – you mentioned the two outs. And here's the thing, too, Pac. There's all levels of this, right? I mean, for all the good that, you know, Virginia may have done with Andrew Abbott and Griff McGarry for seven and a third innings. You know, that part of it at the back end that had been so good in the Supers didn't quite gel when they had to the other night in a winner-take-all game, so to speak, against Mississippi State. But it doesn't diminish the ride. That's the part about this at the end. It's so disheartening at the end. But then you have to think back, okay, how good was the ride that Brian O'Connor got this year, right? I mean, they do a phenomenal job of just keeping it calm and staying on that even keel. And sometimes, you know, the pace of play and the way they play, the grind and all that kind of rubs people the wrong way. But the reality of it is it fits Virginia. It fits their style. And, you know, last night's disheartening for the exact reason you said and Panero mentioned yesterday. It is little things with Virginia that become big things. And when the little things are executed, they normally win. You know, the clip we just showed where the ball got loose in the infield, that's something you rarely see from a Virginia team that's playing well. And so you feel bad for them, but the two-out stuff was real in the ball game last night. That, you can't allow that to happen. It just becomes – it magnifies itself from one frame to the next, and it did last night for the Longhorns.
Right. I mean, Texas scores one run in the fifth on a wild pitch. Again, it's a 2-2 game. Noah had gone yard to tie the thing up. And, man, you're thinking, okay, it's a Virginia kind of game. We're going to get into the bullpen and off to the races you go. But, man, two outs in the eighth. And next thing you know, Melendez gets a hit, and bam, there's a run. Now it's 3-2, and then, of course, the double with two outs in the ninth, clear the bases, and you're down 6-2, and it's game, set, match. And, you know, Virginia even had a shot in the bottom of the sixth. You lead off with a double. You just tied the game up in the fifth, 2-2, and you got a leadoff double, and you're thinking, okay, this is perfect Virginia baseball. Get the guy to third, we'll sacrifice fly, 3-2. Now you got the Vassell's pitching great. He's taking in. He's striking people out left and right. Again, the little things were the difference in the game, just like Pinero said yesterday, that would be the case. And for Virginia, you look back and, yeah, last night was tough, or actually this morning was tough, given when this game ended. But I would still go back to that Mississippi State game. You know, no hitter in the eighth, up 4-0. It felt like you should be up 8-0. Woulda, coulda, shoulda. I know all that. But that, to me, was where you go back. If you're going to take inventory in Virginia's College World Series, that was the moment. You know, so many opportunities in that game against Mississippi State to bury them, just to say, hey, listen, not tonight. This is our night. And, you know, McGriff was fantastic. And, you know, that to me was one you look back at. Losing last night, hey, that's one thing. But the Mississippi State game, you know, if you take care and execute and do the business there, you're not even worried about rain delays or playing Texas on a Thursday night, right? That, to me, was the difference in Virginia's run and why they're not continuing to play. That was the game.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that, you know, again, every game is about something, obviously, but the level of it sometimes is interesting. And for the Cavaliers, it got down to one specific area, relief pitching, and then it got down to details. And it's going to be interesting to see what the spinoff is. This is a team that I think fits the Virginia baseball legacy of Brian O'Connor, though, Pac.
Yeah, you know, listen, when you win a national championship in 2015, that becomes a standard, right? Hey, winning it all. It's not like, hey, it's a pipe dream. We've never won one. Say, hey, Virginia's been there, done that. They've won the national championship. They've lost the national championship. Remember, they lost it in 2014 to Vanderbilt, came right back and won it in 15. So when they get to Omaha, the intention there for Brian O'Connor and his guys is, hey, we're here to win this thing. Hey, we're not. The finish line is in Omaha. The finish line is winning in Omaha. So, but the fact that these guys are able to win six elimination games, and Griff McGarry was so good, not only against Dallas Baptist, but what he did the other night, the no-hitter in the eighth inning. I mean, he made him some coin now, looking forward from that perspective. But, you know, Abbott was out of sight. Oh, no question. Abbott was out of sight. We mentioned when
Abbott was last night, too.
Tremendous.
Bassel struck out eight last night. Yeah.
And you thought the matchup going into the game last night against Texas that the Longhorns would have the advantage given who they had on the bump, but Virginia matched it. And so, again, it's 2-2. You're going the sixth inning. You got a leadoff double in the bottom of the sixth. A chance, again, the little things. Can you get a run in? Man on second, nobody out. They weren't able to do that. And then the bullpen, unfortunately, unraveled with two out again in the eighth and the ninth. And that was the difference in the game. And, again, Texas is really, really good. But a great, great, interesting run for Virginia. I know they feel like there's still some meat on the bone. And I can't emphasize, again, that game with Mississippi State. That was a killer.
All right. Let's hear from Brian O'Connor, the head coach of the Cavaliers, after the game.
This is as special of a team as we've had in this uniform at this university. What they persevered through, the resiliency that they have shown the last 2 months, but specifically over the last 2 weeks, is just remarkable. I told them that, you know, all the teams that we have at Virginia are all special in their own way, but this one is at the top. You know, certainly when you win a national championship, that's pretty special. But this team, what they were able to accomplish based on the position that they were in 2 months ago and then the position they were in over the last 2 weeks with their backs against the wall six times. And, you know, we just we ran into a great club. When you get here in Omaha, you have to play clean. You have to play clean games. And we weren't clean tonight, and Texas took advantage of that. And so, you know, I just incredibly proud of the way that our young men represented our university in this baseball program. Complete class, competitors, and guys that just continued to fight and stand up when their teammates needed them the most. And I told the team after the game that, you know, this is going to hurt. It's going to hurt for a while. It should hurt. When you put the time into it and you care so much, like these young men do, about their team and the success that they want to have, it's going to hurt. But I told them that after they get over the pain of the season being over and losing, they'll realize what they did and the lessons that they learned from what they endured through this season. It'll help them next year for the ones that are back, and then it's going to help them for the rest of their lives. And that's what this experience is about, and I'm proud as heck of them.
Yeah, that's spot on from Coach now. He has it totally in perspective, and he's 100% right. You got to play clean when you get to that level. Everybody there can flat-out play, but you know, I mentioned Vassell and Abbott and McGarry, those starters for Virginia, they did the job. They put you in position to be able to win in advance, but you got to be able to close. And, man, those two out hits are critical when you got guys in scoring position. Yep. You know, if you stayed up till 2 o'clock in the morning watching the game, you know what we're talking about. Eighth to ninth inning, that was the difference in the ballgame.
Yeah. You know, you got some performances. We talked about the pitching. Kyle Teal was sensational in Omaha.
Yes, sir.
He ended up 7-for-12, and Zach Geloff also had 7 hits. I mean, you're talking about a team that grinded from the middle of the season when they lost that opening night game in Atlanta, as we've heard from so many different Cavaliers, to then spinning it and making the run. And Carla Williams, the athletic director, tweeted out last night what this team meant, and quote, incredible display of will, fight, heart, and skill. These Hoos believed in themselves, and we believed in them, battled to the very end. So, and that's the best way to describe it. Best way to describe it for sure. And our congratulations to Brian O'Connor and his squad on a tremendous, tremendous season. Be interesting to watch and see how NC State handles, you know, kind of the scenario in the 2-0 situation getting Vanderbilt later today, Pac.
Well, I'd much rather be sitting at 2-0 than not. That's the good news that, yep. You know what? Hey, go out there and go for the throat, man. Go for the W.
Yep.
End it. Put your stamp on it and punch your ticket to the championship series. And the good news for NC State is, not that you were thinking it this way, but hey, if it turns out you don't have a clean game, don't play well. And Rocker's a great pitcher for Vandy. Hey, you got another day. So NC State's great baseball. And when you look at the run that they've had against who they've beaten in terms of the pitchers, the locations, the teams, there's been no more impressive team in college baseball than NC State right now. Now, can they close the deal? That's why we'll be watching and listening this afternoon at 2 o'clock, God willing, assuming Mother Nature doesn't take over. But NC State has earned the right to be sitting there at 2-0, and they've done it by going to Ruston, they've done it by going to Fayetteville, and they've rolled into Omaha, and they still have a 0 in the loss column, and that is exactly where you want to be. So for Elliott Avent, they've had 3 days off, chilling and grilling, life is good, and here comes Vanderbilt with the combination of Rocker and Leiter and everybody else for those great arms and the championship DNA. It's exactly where you want to be if you're NC State. Bring them on. You know, all these teams that are left, the last four standing, are all terrific and they're talented, but so is NC State. And their resume right now has been as good as anybody in the month of June.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Wake Forest football coach Dave Clawson was with us yesterday. And as always, a really good conversation about his team. But we got into the expansion of the college football playoff. And you've heard a lot of positive things and, you know, timelines and money and the business and things like that. But Coach Clawson yesterday went through what he thought the pros and cons of playoff expansion were, and listen carefully.
Yeah, I think with everything, it's not always as simple as, is it a good thing? Yes. I think for our players, when I brought this up to them, the idea that you can get to November, and let's say it was 2019 and we were 7-1 and ranked 17th, 18th in the country. It's now not, boy, this is a nice little story in the ACC. This is a national story. We are now competing to be in the college football playoff. You know, we had a game a few years ago in 17 that we played NC State, and they were 12th or 14th in the country. And, you know, Truist Stadium was sold out and was on national TV, and it was an electric atmosphere. And that game had a lot to do with the ACC standings and what bowls you're going to. Fast forward to a 12-game playoff, you know, that game is now to maybe be the 9th, 10th, 11th seed in the playoff game. So I think it gives us a chance to have games of national significance later in the season. And, you know, to be very honest with you, if you're in the ACC Atlantic or SEC West, your access to the playoffs has been really difficult. Nobody has done it better during the playoff era than Alabama and Clemson. And those have been the two top programs. And if you're in the ACC Atlantic, it's a very high standard to get there, and that's a credit to Dabo and Clemson and what they've done. So, yes, that would be exciting. The down part of it is, as soon as the playoffs went from 2 to 4 games, you saw a little bit of a de-emphasis with the bowl games. I mean, when we got here, the Orange Bowl was the ultimate goal. If you could ever get to the Orange Bowl, and that was a big goal in our team meeting room, let's become an Orange Bowl team. And then when you see things like North Carolina make the Orange Bowl and their top four players sit out, or Florida makes the Cotton Bowl, which is a great historic elite bowl, and they basically send a JV team there. I can't help imagine that when the playoffs go to 12, that those bowl games aren't in greater risk of being de-emphasized. And I think that's really sad. When we went to the Military Bowl in 16, that was the first bowl that our players had been to in their career here. And to win that game and host the trophy and the celebration in the locker room, and also the educational experience of it. A lot of our players had never been to Washington, D.C., and to see our nation's capital and the monuments. And then fast forward 3 years later, we're in New York City, and half our team had never been to New York City. And to take them to a show on Broadway or to where the World Trade Centers were, the 9/11 Memorial. You know, the playoff games are great and they're incredibly exciting for a fan base, but they're still a part of college football that the whole bowl experience is special. And I've been in 1AA and I've been in FCS and I've been part of a playoff system. And it's great, but it's different than the bowls. It's football. You go to a place, you play a game, you fly home. The bowl experiences are incredible, and I just get very worried, and you've already seen it when it went from 2 to 4, that if you go from 4 to 12, what's going to happen with those games? And I think that would be bad for college football and the student-athlete experience. And again, I've been doing this 33 years. I'm a little bit on the – you know, I've seen both as a 1AA FCS head coach and now a Power 5 head coach. I think when people talk, you know, the championship, yes, but to miss bowl experiences, I think would be really, really sad. It's such an incredible experience for our team.
That was Dave Clawson yesterday on Packer in Durham, and Coach has a great point. Listen, there are many layers of this expansion of the college football playoff. Personally, I think 4-12 makes a ton of sense. I like this setup in terms of teams 1, 2, 3, and 4 getting a bye. 5 plays 12, 6 plays 11, et cetera, et cetera. In a perfect world, I think the second round of the playoffs being on college campuses would make a ton of sense. But I get it. The working group who did a brilliant job, I think, structuring the foundation of where we're going to go with this playoff, did their due diligence. You know what? It makes sense. They tied in their bowl partners for the second round of the playoffs. They got to take care of all those folks. You got to worry about television in this aspect. But Dave Clawson comes from a perspective of, guess what? I'm not Alabama. I'm not Ohio State. I'm not Clemson. But do we now have a chance to join the college football playoff? Yes, you do. That's why I like the concept from the working group with the expansion of the college football playoff. It gives everybody an opportunity that when you play those games in September and October, hey, they matter. If you can get off to a great start, if you can figure out a way to get yourself in to the top 25, top 20 conversation, even with a loss, you can now put yourself in a position that you're playing meaningful games in October and November. That's why I never did understand people before we started talking about the expansion of the college football playoff. Well, if you do that, it's going to ruin the regular season. Wrong answer. Just the exact opposite. If it's done right, you can enhance the regular season. So I think what Dave Clawson was saying yesterday made a ton of sense as far as not only does the regular season, but the other deal is, hey, once you get to those 12 teams in the playoff, how is the trickle-down effect going to affect the bowl season? It's going to. And I think Dave Clawson's point is spot on. When you see guys like the University of North Carolina last year, four of their top players go, hey, I'm going to pass on the Orange Bowl. Hey, you got to take a step back and go, hey, what are we creating here? You know, that's the Orange Bowl. That's not the dogeatmyhomework.com bowl. It's the Orange Bowl, for crying out loud. So I think Dave Clawson is 100% right. And it's going to be intriguing to see what the committee now does when everybody now goes back and starts talking to players, ADs, coaches, and everything else, Wes. What in the world are we going to come up with by the end of September to say, hey, here's where we need to go? I'm not even talking about television negotiations. I'm not even talking about contracts with other bowls and everything else. You've got to figure out the big picture. And I think that's one of the reasons in Dallas this past week, when the presidents and chancellors got together, hey, that's a green light, but guess what? There is a ton of work to be done from a contractual standpoint, from a deal with your television, and how are we going to take care of everybody? I'm not sure you can take care of everybody, but Dave Clawson's point yesterday regarding the trickle-down effect to the bowls for teams that don't make that field of 12 for the college football playoff, I think is spot on.
I think it is too, and I think it also coincides with what Heather Dinich talked about with us the other day. Not just as it relates to the contracts of the leagues involved in the games that would be kind of included into that 12-team playoff pack, but how do the bowls and their associations go back and forth with the way conferences handle them? For instance, I mean, let's take the one in Charlotte in your backyard. That's a relatively young bowl by standard, right? It's not, what is it, less than 15 years old?
Right.
That game, though, has got a lot of momentum to it. It's featured an ACC and an SEC team. That's two leagues that geographically kind of work for that market, correct? And they've got a good sponsorship. They've had more than one. Now they've got Duke Mayonnaise, and it works out fine. Now let's take a bowl that's got some age to it, like the Gator Bowl. Well, you and I both know this, that Rick Catlett is now handed over to Greg McGarrity and handling that and that foundation and that sports commission down there. That's a really good bowl game. It's got a ton of history in it, but it's kind of bounced around a little bit. Are those games and all those histories, are they going to be sacrificed for the growth of the college football playoff to include 8 more teams? That's a tough thought for schools that enjoy the bowl experience that don't always put all their eggs in. If we're not in the college football playoff, we've had a disastrous year. I think we've got to come back to a little bit of the original idea what the postseason game meant. Yes, the conference alignments are important and things like that. But what's happened in these games, and Clawson pointed it out, with Carolina in the Orange Bowl and Florida in the Cotton Bowl, that's not good for college football. That's just not good for the game. And I think he brings up some really good points. There's still value. I remember Georgia Tech went to the Seattle Bowl, the very first one ever played. They played it in Safeco Field, whatever. It was called Safeco Field. I think it's called something else now where the Mariners play. They played Stanford. George Godsey was the quarterback. And he said at the press conference the day before the game, the local media, all excited about a Seattle Bowl game, even though it was in late December, said, you know, George, have you guys had a great time? He goes, yeah, you know, when we heard we were coming to the Seattle Bowl, we really didn't know what to expect. He said, but the city's been great. The people have been fantastic. He goes, I'd like to come back to Seattle and go out on one of those boats and see the whales and that kind of thing. That right there just kind of captured in one or two sentences what I think players think about when they go to these markets for bowl games when they're not jaded by the college football playoff. And I still think that some of these bowls have some purpose and have some success rate about them. And that concerns me, too, as somebody that's a fan of college football.
I used to work at a bowl, a thing called the Blockbuster Bowl. Remember Blockbuster? There's one left somewhere out in Oregon. Here's how I feel about bowls. If a bowl can stand on its own two feet, you can justify, hey, you know what? There's an interest locally. Our fans support it. Whatever schools show up, they buy their tickets without being absolutely taken to the bank on that, because I do think some of the bowl prices are absolutely ridiculous. If you can stand on your own two feet and you can justify the existence of your bowl game, I think you should exist and do your thing. What I don't like is games that are created that you have two teams coming from nowhere that have no relationship whatsoever, and it's just a game played in front of 1,500 people because it's on television. Now, I know we work for ESPN, and ESPN owns and operates a gazillion of these, but I'm just speaking now as a fan sitting on the couch. To me, I think at some point in time, you have to figure out what bowls are here because of all the right reasons and what bowls are here because they're a television outlet. To me, there's nothing more boring than watching two teams that, quite frankly, just don't want to even play another game, and there's 2,000 people in the stands. That does nothing for me, personally. Now, there'd be me some folks out there love to gamble. You do whatever it is in fantasy leagues, whatever makes you happy. But I think that needs to be kind of a correction, too. And maybe the playoff becomes that. Wes, I don't know. We're going to find this thing out. But you got to figure we're going to go to 12, right? I mean, unless something crazy happens, we're going to go to 12. And I do think there will be a trickle-down effect on the bowl business. Big picture. I do.
Yeah. I think that we are going to watch. Look, and you know this too. We how many times have you and I talked about the ACC going from 8 to 9 to 12 to 15, right? There's always some give and take in any process. There's going to be some give and take going to 12 in the college football playoff. No matter how inclusive the design of it is, there's going to be some give and take. Are the bowls, those historical games, Sun Bowl, Gator Bowl, are those games going to be sacrificed in this? It's going to be interesting to watch. It really is going to be interesting to watch. And those contracts, and I thought Heather made a great point. It could slow the timeline down. You know, to getting us, everybody wants this thing in the fall of 23 and January of 24. I don't know where you are on a Friday, but when she said that the other day, the more I've thought about it, I'm just not sure that timeline is real yet. I think that's awfully, awfully fast for this whole process to take shape, for sure.
Well, I think that was one of our fill-in-the-blank questions this week. When do you think it's going to start? And I told you 26. I think you said 24. Yeah. And I said, I hope you're right. I do think it's going to be complex. I think when you get lawyers in the room and there are a lot of people with their hands out, normally this is going to take a long time. It's going to take longer than you think it's going to be. And I hope that the college football playoff expansion isn't hurt because the Jimmy Kimmel Bowl is sitting there going, hey, how about us? I don't care about the Jimmy Kimmel Bowl. I don't care about a fifth-place team playing somebody else in front of Jimmy Kimmel and his immediate family in front of 12 people in L.A. That game means nothing to me. So let's make sure that we take care of the playoff. And if the Jimmy Kimmel L.A. Bowl can exist, good for them. But if it's got to go by the wayside of the Cheetos Dog Ate My Homework.com Bowl or my helicopter just flew away.com Bowl, that we can do away with those. I'll be just fine with that. Well, college football will survive without the Joey's Taco Bowl down there in San Antonio. Well, we'll be okay without it. So, you know, let's make sure that we take care of what is driving the deal here, and that is the college football playoff. That's where the money is.
When we come back, I've just been told we'll take you behind the scenes of Packer and Durham. I have no idea what that could be about. And
I have a feeling.
A preview of NC State Vanderbilt, scheduled to go at 2 o'clock this afternoon from TD Ameritrade in Omaha. Caroline Darney, who has covered Virginia for SB Nation, joins us at 8 o'clock as we roll on a Friday. I know. What does your shirt say again? What is that? Something. I eat what I want. It's great. I love it. That may win T-shirt Friday of all time, by the way.
Well, let me
Beast
tell you
of
something.
Beast Bourbon and I eat what I want. Let me tell you, those have been strong.
I'm going to give you a little hint. I'm not done with the T-shirt game today. I'm not done.
Oh, you're gonna go Diana Ross on us?
I'm going to go Jeff Collins on you. I'm going to go Jeff Collins on you today on T-shirt Friday.
Going Jeff Collins on us, huh?
Yeah, if you remember, right. Jeff Collins was co-host. And Collins was a co-host for an hour, and every 15 minutes, he changed into a different 404 brand Georgia Tech deal. So I'm going to give you a little Jeff Collins special today on the show.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Before we get to the Wolfpack and the Commodores, did you realize that today is National Take Your Dog to Work Day?
Of course.
And this is no stretch for you.
Every day.
It's no stretch for you.
Every day. Here's the boys. There's Chester. He's out sound asleep on the Roger Goodell chair. And, of course, Fuller is down here at my feet, as he normally is, waiting for his man, Buddy West, to finally reappear in the studio in the basement since March of 2020. So the boys are locked and loaded. And obviously the content so far, 52 minutes in the show, have both of them sound asleep. So that's the deal. But it is National Take Your Dog to Work Day. And I am proud to say I have done that for a long, long time, whether it be on SiriusXM or now here on ACC Network. Those are the boys. God bless them.
So National Take Your Dog to Work Day, not just on Packer and Durham, personally. There's also some other day today, too. It's amazing how we've gone there. NC State, one win away from reaching the championship round of the College World Series. First time in three appearances, they would be the sixth different ACC school to play for the title in the first since Virginia won it in 2015. It's a rematch of a great game, not a good game, a great game the other night with the Wolfpack and Commodores. And if you didn't have a vested interest, Pack, it was sensational baseball when NC State and Vandy got together the other night in Omaha.
Old school rock'em sock'em, first to score wins, and both pitchers were out of sight. I suspect, Wes, weather permitting, today at 2 p.m. Eastern time, you're going to get another dose of that. It just seems like both these teams, they can pitch, and who can get the key hit, much like Texas last night against Virginia, actually early this morning, and with the two out hits that were the difference in the ball game. It will be the little things when it comes to NC State and Vanderbilt. It just feels that way, given the fact that Vandy's really had a tough time scoring. It was a miracle win against Stanford the other night when they scored two in the ninth with nobody on, two outs, two strikes, one strike away from elimination. But NC State knows what they're up against, and I think Vanderbilt does too. I think Boo Corrigan yesterday on the show brought up a really interesting and point that you don't hear anybody say, hey, somebody's got to beat NC State. Right? You know,
right.
Vanderbilt's got a little chink in the armor in the L column. NC State's got the zero. So nobody has figured out the Wolfpack yet. And after going back-to-back W's at Arkansas, which nobody does, NC State's looking for the kill shot today. And like I said earlier, I think America's rooting for them just so they don't have to listen to that stupid Vanderbilt whistling nonsense anymore. But NC State's playing great baseball. They've been tremendous away from home. Oh, it's been well documented. We've given you all the numbers and so forth. So I think the Pack, they're rested, they're healthy, they're good to go, and I just hope that Mother Nature cooperates this afternoon and we get the game in, and NC State can go ahead and punch their ticket for next week.
Yeah, NC State, by the way, also has a chance to beat three Golden Spikes finalists. How about that? And Kevin Copps of Arkansas, Jack Leiter of Vanderbilt, and Kumar Rocker the other Commodore Ace here today. So we'll see how that goes. What an amazing accomplishment that would be for NC State. The Wolfpack will send Matt Willitson to the mound. He's 5-3 with a 4.73 ERA. He worked four innings at Arkansas, but also won at Louisiana Tech. He did start and pitch pretty well, by the way, despite the 1-0 loss to Duke in the ACC championship game at Charlotte.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.